Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. Happy New Year. It is the second day of 2019. We are thrilled to have you join us. It is 12 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock, and we have a wonderful panel before us, and we have a lot to talk about, so we will get to it. Let me introduce everybody. A reminder, you can join in on the fun. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Also a reminder, keep your letters short, keep them to the point, don't use links, attachments, and don't send more than one a day. We have an abbreviated panel this morning because the governor will be talking to Alan at 10:05 this morning, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, and we will be talking to him. So we have the panel until 10 a.m. this morning. So the quicker you keep your notes, the more we can get to and more topics we can discuss. Let me introduce everybody in the room. Former New York State Senator, SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor, and our good friend Terry Gibson is here. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning. Happy New Year. Great
to be
back.
Happy New Year to you. Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith is with us. Happy New Year, Jen.
Happy New Year, and welcome to 2019, everybody.
Yeah, it's nice to have you. Well, say hi again.
Oops, good morning.
No, your mic is not on for some reason.
It is on now because the blue light
tells
me so. Oh, there
we go. Okay, excellent. We want to hear you. God knows we want to hear you. Sarah Rogerson is with us. She's an Albany Law School professor who directs the Immigration Law Clinic. We missed you last week. We're so glad you're here this week. Thank you.
I'm very glad to be back. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you for being here. And WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, raring to go. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm scratching my head trying to figure out whether the United States has ever put a so-called asset into Russia. In other words, when people run for political office, right, Terry, they always say, what we need is more assets, meaning we need more spies. And yet, when somebody is arrested, I haven't heard one person on the air all weekend long say anything like, is it possible he really was a spy?
Interesting. I have no idea how to respond to that. I think it's because we as Americans are so obsessed with our own internal politics that the idea of trying to consider what Russia is doing related to spies is difficult.
Oh, they had a spy. We know they had a spy. She pled guilty. So now the question is, do we have spies over there? Well, you know darn well that we do have spies over there.
I watch Bond movies.
Spies, intelligence, yeah. You know.
The Americans.
Yeah, the Americans. So that's good. Right.
We know they got them. Now, I'm not saying this guy is. I'm just saying it would be nice if the news media, in its obviously fair and balanced approach to news, would say, I wonder, you know, is it possible he was a spy? You know, I have a feeling that the Russians know exactly who our spies are.
Absolutely.
And they keep in touch with them.
And we hope that we know who the Russian spies are.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I hope so.
I think we do. When I worked for, I think I may have mentioned this at one point, but when I worked for Congressman Thompson up on the Hill as an intern all those years ago, there was this really nice guy. He was a Russian. And they introduced me to him. And he said, let me take you to lunch. So I think you know, these guys are all around the place.
Well, it is going to be interesting on this spy issue to see how our current president deals with it. I think it could be purposely a test.
Or maybe the House now can issue subpoenas to find out more information about
it. It's a new day in America, isn't it?
How about that?
How exciting. How exciting. I mean, we can all have some relief. We can put a breath out there and say, oh, boy, you know, at least somebody will be on the job watching this guy, this character. And, of course, what about that Mitt Romney? Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get to let's start our way through everything. And we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. So, we were talking about the new Congress. Now, the president has invited congressional leaders to the White House for a border security briefing. What could go wrong? It is a first face-to-face session involving Republicans and Democrats as the partial government shutdown entered its second week. The briefing will occur one day before the Democrats take control of the House and Trump gets his first taste of divided government. It was unclear whether the Wednesday session would break the budget impasse in its 11th day today as Trump... That's not true. It's the 11th day. It's the 12th day today. Today's Wednesday, yes. As Trump has demanded billions of dollars for a U.S.-Mexico border wall, and Democrats have rejected his request. Trump had campaigned on a pledge to build a wall at Mexico's expense, a proposition Mexican officials called ludicrous, and there were many others who called it ludicrous as well. So the meeting to take place before the takeover of Congress, what do we make of this?
Well, the first thing that we're hearing is that Trump wants it this time because he didn't do well last time with the press in there, mm-hmm. in the most secure room in the White House. And we'll see whether he changes his mind about that. And I think everybody will be all agog waiting to see whether Vice President Pence says his first words.
Well, and I think that's it. It's that tone whenever the president invites, you know, strategically invites press, and it's you want to be leery almost and say, you know, what is being staged? What direction? Because it's a controlled event, right? It's not just an impromptu presser where you can freely ask questions. So I'll be very curious to see what his messaging will be. You know, if you can try to balance it or find the nuances it from the last Twitter storm of events. And there's a lot to answer to for certain if he takes questions, you know, especially, you know, from the latest round of tear gassing to the latest what the budget request is going to be. I mean, these numbers are all over the place.
Well, we don't know, right? Yeah. We have no idea. We don't even know. It could be a fence. It could be a wall. It could be slats. It could be metal. It could be this. It could be that. We don't know. We don't even know that. After a meeting with Lindsey Graham over the weekend, that was supposed to clarify a lot. And yet...
Clear as mud.
And then we had the thing about with Kelly of saying, you know, there was not there. They abandoned the idea of a concrete wall. We didn't abandon the idea of a concrete wall. So I don't know. I have no idea. There seems to be some there was thought, well, is the president blinking? Are they going to accept the $1.3 billion or try to make some negotiation out of that? Or, as he says in his tweets, sometimes that they're going to hold out for the entire $5
billion. Well, but don't you think that this president is going to blink because he's losing? Look, this is a guy who was in the real estate business, right? You make a gambit, you make an offer. Does anybody else hear that?
He's calling you now.
Yeah, the governor. A governor on line one.
I'm not sure he's going to blink. I'm actually very concerned about this. I'm concerned that the Democrats, with the power that they now have, and I'm excited about that, I'm very concerned that they could overplay their hand. I think it's important to remember that one of the reasons we have difficulty sort of trying to understand what this president wants is that what we're really dealing with is his ego. We are really dealing with his ego. Anybody who is trying to negotiate him is negotiating with his ego. And the people that are feeding his ego are his base. And the base, his base, is not concerned about the government being shut down to any great degree. In fact, many of his base are actually happy about it.
But he, in fairness, he wished even the haters a Happy New Year.
Mm. Yes, he did.
Happy New Year to everyone, including the haters and the fake news media.
Yeah, but it's still at the end of the day. It's messing with people's tax dollars. It's messing with human resources. And it's messing with human beings. You know, again, Sarah, I'd really love to hear from you because this is your field. And this is the key token this is the pawn that's being used to control government right now is this one issue that's being held on like a dog with a bone.
Yeah, and it has been for a very long time. Ellen, you and I went back and forth on this a while back when DACA was rescinded, and it was DACA for the wall.
Yes, and that seems to be reimposed now. We're hearing that that's the next thing, next big thing.
But he pinned his hopes to the wrong thing. And now, I mean, speaking of messaging, just having it in the Situation Room implies that we're the wall is some crisis. It's not. It's not a crisis. The border is in crisis because of Trump's policies.
There's no policy. I think that's the thing that scares me is there's still no long-term plan. You know, we're talking about billions of dollars in investment. If you were a contractor and you'd put out an RFP, right? You'd have certain things that you expect to get done. And when we, as the people, the watchdogs, aren't seeing anything put down to say, this is where your investment is going, that's scary.
Well, you're right, Jen. This is why this whole situation is so dangerous, because the newly empowered Democrats have a plan. They have a long list of things that they want to achieve right now, with border security certainly being on that list to some degree, but not to the level that the president wants. The president really has no plan. His plan is to feed his ego, to feed his base, and to make sure the talk radio hosts that support him are happy with what he's doing. It doesn't make for a good environment for negotiation. And I'm very concerned that every day that we spend talking about the border, it's one more day that the newly empowered Democrats are not able to move forward with an agenda which includes a whole lot more things like protecting our environment, dealing with health care, putting people back to work.
Agreed, but because of the shutdown, you have to deal with it.
You have to deal with it. But how do you deal with a person who really just wants his ego stroked? And until he feels as if that's done.
You know what your problem is, Terry? You know what your problem is?
What is my problem?
You just need to calm down and enjoy the ride.
You're right.
And you know what else?
Just calm down and enjoy the ride.
Absolutely.
And you know what else? There's something called the United States Senate sitting up there, too. So that, well, you're right, well, that the Democrats in the Congress will put out a whole bunch of agenda items. It's unlikely that many of them are going to get done, other than from a PR perspective, that this is what we ought to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, if the Democrats are going to harness this moment, and the border is about health care. The border is about our economy. The border is about our environment. And so if Trump wants to have a conversation about the border, then let's have a conversation about the border, but let's make it an informed conversation. I'm not a big champion of Beto for president, but he released a really incredible short video about the border zone, the large swaths of land, the diversity of the geography of the people who live there. These are communities that will be disrupted. So if we can, if Trump wants to talk about a wall, then we can talk about healthcare, migration, how limiting migration in this way has very damaging environmental impacts.
So would it be worth, you know, you're the immigration expert, would it be worth a trade for DACA for a $5 billion wall?
No wall, not 1 cent for a wall. I think what they'll probably end up with is additional funding for border security, which they do every year.
Which is what, I mean, that seemed to be the Lindsey Graham move over the weekend, right? Mm-hmm. That we're going to change the definition.
What more
the president,
drones.
What the president means when he says that.
It's contradictory to the actions that have already taken place. So if you look at any
on the president's own tweets, yes.
Right, and if you look at the customs and border funding that has been awarded already, it's, you know, several million dollars for repairing wall that already exists. And that's a specific concrete allocation. So when you're talking, when you're analyzing whether it's what the Democrats that would initially settle for, which is the 1.2, 1.3 billion or the 5 billion that the president's matching, look at the numbers of really like where this money is going. And it's not solving those those issues that it's not creating anything new. And then if you look again, even deeper at where that agency is hiring right now, it's being allocated all across our borders. It's not just being concentrated, in the U.S.-Mexico line.
And I would love to see more of that money going to legal services. Mm-hmm. There are ways to, I don't want to say manipulate, there are ways to redirect federal funding streams. We did it here in Albany. There was a headline, Mercy Paid For by ICE. Mm-hmm. We took some of the federal monies that the Albany County Jail received for boarding individuals transported from the border and And the county legislature reallocated some of that federal funding to having a full-time attorney on staff at the jail to talk with folks who are picked up.
And why aren't we making deals or talking about negotiating more with these countries of origin to really figure out how to channel there?
Yeah. And before our break at the bottom of the hour, I would like to get Sarah's perspective on the, while all this was going on, we hear the story about the tear gassing across the Mexico border. And to stop migrants, we understand that about 150 migrants tried to breach the border fence in Tijuana. U.S. Customs and Border Protection said in a statement later Tuesday that the gas was used to target rock throwers apart from the migrants who were trying to cross. The statement said, quote, no agents witnessed any of the migrants at the fence line, including children experiencing effects of the chemical agents, which were targeted at the rock throwers further away.
But unfortunately, there were journalists that were also in the group of people who were targeted by Border Patrol who took video, which was
Correct.
Posted this morning.
Toddler-sized children.
So, and also, I mean, during our break, we didn't have the opportunity to talk about the two children who died in custody one on Christmas morning. It's a disaster. Story broke over the weekend. I kind of lost it on Twitter a little bit because they have videos of kids being hauled around by their shirts, dragged along the floor in these private facilities that are run by federal contractors. So,
but if it's true, Sarah, and if somebody lifted their kid and literally threw them over the fence, what would you make of that if it's true?
I would say that person must be terrified. I have a friend actually who spent the last week and a half. I think she's still down there in Nogales.
What do you mean terrified?
Terrified. A lot of the people who are fleeing to our country are fleeing violence in their home countries. As Jen said, we
so
need to
focus.
So
if you throw
on
the kid over the fence, it's that the kid is better off being taken care of by someone other than you in order to be in the States.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, nobody puts their baby in the boat unless it's safer than the shore.
And a minute to go, but do you think any of this, on at least on the Democratic side, will come up in the conversations when we're talking about border security?
No. Yeah. I mean, maybe.
That's what I'm worried
about. I hope the oversight committees start investigating the allegations of abuse.
Yes. I just hope someone calls BS. I mean, I think that's what it right. comes to at the end of the day. And, you know, I've said this before. It's, again, who treats a child cold with an antibiotic? You, as a parent, you don't do that. But yet we're over-medicating these kids. We're pumping them with ibuprofen and things because they're all apparently sick when they come over the border. That's just human neglect. Again, as Sarah mentioned, it's a public health crisis. It's an environmental crisis. It's a fiscal crisis. It's a humanitarian crisis. It's an economic crisis. We got to start talking and really looking at these facts that are mounting and mounting and mounting.
And it's not a military crisis.
I keep seeing the pictures of the fence, the slats fence. That's what they keep showing on the TV. So you have to say, that thing couldn't stop anybody. I mean, this is nonsense.
East, you can go west, you can go around, or you're going to have migration crises in other areas that we will eventually have to answer to. So you can't keep band-aiding the situation.
You know, the president still has the largest microphone in this entire negotiation, and he's going to find a way to call this a wall no matter what they decide to do, no matter how it's negotiated. He's going to call it a wall.
Sure. There's your 20 seconds.
There's 20 seconds. Hey, we'll welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We have until 10 o'clock this morning. And then Governor Andrew Cuomo will be on with Alan shortly after the top of the hour. Again, panel at WAMC.org. We will continue after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable on the second day of January 2019. Terry Gibson is here, Jen Smith, Sarah Rogerson, and Alan Chartok with a fistful of letters. We'll get to those right now, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org.
That's right, Joe, and thank you very much. Regular writer Peter says, Dear Alan, when an American citizen has been taken captive by a hostile foreign government, particularly a government known for its ruthless use of discriminate disinformation, it is not your place or the place of the news media in general to speculate as to whether the charges leveled against him are true or not. You, in fact, have no information. all you are doing is kind of a juvenile, mischievous speculating. And by doing so, you endanger the life and well-being of a fellow American. You owe him and his family an apology.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And isn't, I think...
Ain't gonna happen.
Isn't asking a question about what the possibilities are? I mean, that's fair game, right? I think we could all agree on that.
Well, I certainly do.
Yeah.
And Mitchell says, question for the roundtable. Does the Secret Service have to protect its president if he's in jail?
Well, that I... I mean, be fascinating to see.
Somebody better protect him. Yeah. Okay, and Anne says, excellent point. Excellent point, she says. Good morning, panel. Alan made a crucial point about the media's failure to even ask question whether Paul Whelan might be, in fact, actually a spy. He probably isn't, but not a single anchor raised the possibility of failure to question received truths is dangerous in these times of extreme propaganda from the White House, and that's from Anne in Connecticut.
Now, if we had time and we wanted to make mischief, what would be great is to get her on the line and the other guy on the line. Yeah. Just let them duke it out for a while.
The other guy is known for his regularity.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be great. Yeah. That'd be fun.
Okay, and here we go. Jean, now this is very interesting, says, and I'm going to give her last name. Her name is Jean King. And she says, spies. Today on Morning Edition, co-host Noel King asked John Cipher if Paul Warren could be a spy. Of course, Mrs. Cipher answered with an unqualified no. So, Alan, don't say the question hasn't been asked. Full disclosure, Noel is my daughter and was raised on WAMC. Happy New Year.
Oh, that's cool.
That's wonderful.
That's great. Cool.
We'd bring her into the conversation, too, with the other two.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be good.
And Joel says, White House meeting, the Dems should not go. They should invite the Homeland Security people to Congress instead without Trump. Colbert King says it all in today's Washington Post when he quotes the spider and the fly. And that's Joel from Blooming Grove, also a regular writer.
Except for it shouldn't be Homeland Security that they invite because they're sort of only part and parcel of this conversation. You should really get the Border Patrol agency to come to Congress.
Well, and they're under that umbrella, but the mm-hmm. Department of Justice too.
Mm-hmm.
We've got there's so many departments to call into Congress.
Well, I do agree with the writer in that I don't think that the Democrats should approach this president in what would be considered traditional under any other administration. They need to find a different way to deal with this character, and they need to do it so that they keep control of the situation. Mm-hmm. And going to his house and being advised by his staff is not necessarily a way to keep control.
Well, he is the president. And the problem is that while he doesn't act presidential and while he acts outside of the norms of the tradition of respect between the two branches of government, I think that the Democrats would be seen as less than respectful of the presidency if they didn't go. Now, there'll be people who write us letters and say, well, that's okay. They shouldn't go, but what can I tell you? And then we heard from Jerry, our friend Jerry. Hi, Happy New Year. Be prepared for Trump to pull something out of his bag today to knock the Democrats off balance. This is not just a briefing. That's Trump style, if you can call it that, and that's from Jerry in Gilderland. All right.
He is running the show. He's running the show. He has the largest microphone in America right now.
In the world, probably.
If not the world, right. So it's going to be interesting. I am very concerned about how the Democrats handle this because they need to get off to a good, positive, energetic start and not get bogged down in this shutdown. And we need to end the shutdown right away.
But don't you think that they came out the big winners in the last sit-down?
I don't know. I still have mixed feelings about that. I mean, I don't think anybody really wins in this shutdown. I don't think anybody comes out of the shutdown.
No, no, no. I'm talking about the last conversation when they went to the
White House. Yeah, Pelosi's red jacket.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
That won the internet.
I mean, I think in the world of, in the Twitter world, in the social media world, I think, party-wise, yes, we Democrats are very happy with how that meeting went. But what did it really solve? I mean, are we really solving any problems?
Well, it did solve something. It did solve something, I think. Because as the analysis of that meeting went forward, the Democrats came out on top. They did. In other words, you know, he's full of baloney. Trump is full of baloney. He's full of bluster. And they were respectful. I thought Schumer was a little too respectful, to be perfectly honest with you. But they were respectful. And yet they came away. And by the time all the analysis and the media stuff was done, a win for Pelosi and Schumer.
But is it a win for the American people, which is what I'm concerned about right now? I'm concerned about what the people of this country have right now. Now we have a government that's shut down, and I want to see it resolved.
Well, but wait a second. Are you calling the Democrats at fault?
No, I'm not calling them at fault. I'm just saying that I think that we often rush too soon to give praise to situations that don't actually end with any real significant results.
Okay. And to pick up on Sarah's point earlier, why were we – I mean, one of the the talking points of that original meeting was the Democrats agreeing to $1.3 billion. Well, Why were the Democrats doing that?
Well, even there, there is a question as to whether they did agree to that. Mm. In other words, they never have said that 1.3 should be used for the wall. Mm. They've always said it should be used for security. They've been very careful about that. So we pretty well assume it will be, but we don't know.
Well, it's, you know, a wall is border security. Cameras are border security. Putting more people on the border are border security. It's all border security. And we're in this circular sort of conversation here where it's always going to be about border security. It's just about what you call it. We're talking about semantics. We're talking about euphemisms.
We need a definition. And everybody has to have the
point. At the end of the day, everybody's going to want to define this the way they're going to define it. But I don't see anybody coming out of this shutdown being real winners. I think the American people are losing every day. And I don't think it's going to be possible for people on either side of this argument to come out in a really positive place, because so many of the things are just being brought to a halt right now that really do affect people's lives.
Yeah, but what are you really saying? I mean, you know, it's almost Pablum-like to say, well, the American people are being held hostage and it's terrible for the American people and we have to make it better and I don't like what anybody's doing. But I tell you, if you are the Democrats with virtually no power up until now, I think you have to play the cards that you're dealt in order to put a stop to some of this nonsense. And I think they did it, and they did it extraordinarily well.
All right, let's do some other letters.
Here we go, Joe. Thank you. So negotiating with Donald, says Mike. So legislative leaders are going to the White House to get, quote, briefed on border security. There's been talk of negotiations also, in quotes, over the wall. I'm reminded of a 60s game show called To Tell the Truth, with the tagline being, will the real John Doe please stand up? I guess the question here would be, will the real Donald Trump please stand up? Wasn't he first offered $25 billion and DACA protection that he first accepted and then backed away from, pressured by the Freedom Caucus? How do you negotiate with somebody who has a mercurial disposition? How can you depend on his word? Well, the one thing that stood out there was $25 billion. Does anybody else remember $25 billion?
No, I don't remember.
No.
I think that was like a very, very initial astronomical claim.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you from Mike from Glens Falls.
Well, we know for sure that there will be more astronomical claims after this meeting. That's why it's not open to the public. And, you know, each side will have its own version of the narrative. Maybe we should start talking about border solutions.
And Jim says, wall. Truthful or not, Trump gives his side of the argument in, quote, concrete terms. Democrats' side of the argument is more vague. They need to counter Trump with the facts and speak in the language of everyday Americans. Cite the facts over and over again in Twitter-like bits. And that's Jim from Glenmont.
And I really appreciate that they did that with Nielsen when they brought her before congressional hearing asking about, did you know that crime rates drop in areas that have high concentrations of recently arrived immigrants? Did you know? Did you know that this number of people died in your custody? Did you know? And fact after fact after fact. And just, she had egg on her face after that. And all of the reporting that came out was how... was her loyalism, right?
Well, here's
to the wall and to Trump.
Well, here's the problem. If the tree falls in the woods and nobody sees or hears it, it didn't happen. Now, even in these congressional things, and you're quite right to say kudos to you, how many Americans actually knew any of that?
Well, it was well covered, so hopefully people are paying attention. And at least Twitterverse was paying attention. And I think... for better or for worse, a lot more people are keyed in and are getting their news.
Not to give you a hard time, Sarah, but I read five newspapers all night long, and I didn't know that. So I assume if I didn't know it, an awful lot of other people didn't know it.
Which five newspapers, Alan?
I read the Times. I read the Post. I read the Daily News. I read the Guardian. I mean, I read them all, because I'm desperately looking for something that I didn't, you know, hadn't been appraised of.
I think it is a good strategy, though. I think that the Democrats, as the writer said, would be well served by not only pushing back to the Trump administration with facts, but also doing a better job of just communicating to the American people in their messaging about these facts to help educate us and help educate everyone about what's really going on and about the negative side of this whole border conversation. And I think those facts could resonate if repeated over and over and over again.
You know, I was thinking about something. What if people in this country who were really very tired of Trump and very angry with him were asked to put money into a gigantic fund which would put an ad on the television every single day? So in other words, all the things that Sarah just said, he had a fact a day. I knew a great assistant principal in Great Barrington, Kate McDermott, and she would say, teach them a fact a day. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be great if, instead of just giving money to candidates to do this, there would be a place in which people could donate in order to make this happen?
Well, considering end of the year giving, and I did give to WAMC at 11:45 p.m. on New Year's Eve.
Oh. I mean, it was that counts. That counts.
My husband found out we were giving on this program when I announced. So
that's the way it is in my house when Roselle announces something.
So usually on the radio. But there are organizations that you can give to that are really trying to move the needle on this. The American Immigration Council is one of them, and down in D.C., I mean, there are professional shops that are doing this, that are thinking really strategically about how to shift the narrative. I do live in an immigration bubble. You're right, Alan.
I was thinking it, but I wasn't saying it.
But that's my job, right?
Yeah, it is.
So, you know, sometimes I disconnect from that bubble because it's just so horrific.
Or we need your bubble to connect with other people's bubbles, right. So we are more informed.
So we're working on it. It's hard to make immigration a catchy topic in pop culture. Ariana Grande did her level best.
Yes, tried.
But it didn't quite get it to the border solutions.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and we'll finish up. We welcome your letters, panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We have a few more topics to delve into. We'll do that right after this. Well, Happy New Year. It's the second day of January. We have a great panel here. We have Terry Gibson, Jen Smith, Sarah Rogerson, Alan Chartok. How did you celebrate the New Year? Well, the president was tweeting. He said that retired General Stanley McChrystal is known for a big, dumb mouth. And then he got fired like a dog by President Obama. The president identified McChrystal as a general, apparently deriding the former military official by placing his title in quotes and called him a Hillary lover. That came after the retired general told Martha Raddatz on ABC's This Week that the president is immoral and does not tell the truth. Similar, by the way, to comments made by incoming Republican Senator Mitt Romney, who was attacked by the president on Twitter this morning as well. Let the new year begin.
So let's begin with let's begin with the senator from Utah. Interesting. Utahians do not like Trump. Now that's interesting. And I want Terry to talk about this because he looks a little like Trump. He looks a little like
Romney.
Like Romney, yeah.
Please correct yourself, sir. I think
Terry's
your color
over
palette
the table.
Is way off.
Okay. So anyway, you know, this is a guy with a checkered history. Romney, of course, he ran. He was the governor of my state, and pretty good. We had Romney Care, things like that, you know, happening. on the he had some downsides, like the dog on top of the car, but we'll let that go, you know, for now.
What, I don't think you're ever going to let that go.
And binders full of women. That's mine. That's the one that
binders,
I can't.
Binders full of women.
Yes,
yes. But then also, he you know, fawned over the president, trying to get him to support him for Senate. He fawned over the president, remember that, trying to become Secretary of State, visit, and was seriously embarrassed by the president. And now he goes and does this in a place which is convenient for him to do it. I think it's terrific that he's doing it, by the way. I love it. But on the other hand, let's try to keep it in some perspective.
Here we go with Mitt Romney, but so fast. Questions will be, is he a flake? I hope not. Would much prefer that Mitt focus on border security and so many other things where he can be helpful. I won big. He didn't. He should be happy for all Republicans. And a pop-up ad just came up as I was reading that. He should be happy for all Republicans, be a team player, and win, all capitals.
I don't think that this president really has any idea about how to put together a team. That's clear. He can't seem to keep a team together for 5 minutes on anything.
Or to be loyal to anybody.
Yeah. Right, and he doesn't know anything about loyalty. I think it is important and newsworthy. And we should recognize when somebody as prominent as Mitt Romney does come out and criticize the character of the president, does criticize his leadership abilities. On the other hand, if you read the op-ed, you do see that Mitt does still embrace his policies. He embraces Trump's policies. He congratulates him for appointing conservative judges and passing conservative tax legislation. So if Trump was behaving in a way that Mitt would approve of, then I don't think Mitt would have any problems with him. I mean, we have to remember that regardless of how Trump acts and how he behaves and the awful language that he uses, he has actually achieved some really awful policies from a progressive Democratic point of view, which is the one that I represent. And some of the things that he's done relating to the deregulation of environmental protection are terrifying and terrible. We're being pushed back into the 1960s, the 50s, the 40s even to some degree. So I'm not sure that what Mitt is saying is to the level that's really going to make a significant change in the way the president
behaves. Well, except, Terry, that he is breaking with this solid wall of Republicans in the United States Senate who haven't got the guts, even though they talk to each other and to a lot of other people about how bad this guy is, Trump is. So that in itself is pretty outstanding, I think.
I think it is. I hope he continues.
I was going to say, and that's it. If he continues to lead a charge and exercise senior leadership, then, you know, I might be inclined to be more impressed. But I think we've heard lots of words get thrown around, and I'm pretty sick and tired of words. And as Sarah pointed out, I'd rather see solutions, and I'd rather see, you know, strength in if this is supposed to be a session of change, put it in action.
And yet, Jen, respectfully to you, of course, which I always
always
am, yeah. There is this this thing where we sit around this table time and time again and talk about those terrible Republican senators who haven't got the guts to do what's right. Mm. So now when we get one who is obviously leading the way and who may in fact be getting ready to run for president himself again in 2020, I think we have to give him some credit.
I think again, you do have to pay attention, but you do have to pay attention to see if he follows up, and you do have to pay attention to see if any of his colleagues join and back him up too. Because if you're only a party of one and you can't change the party, how effective are you as a leader? And you also have to keep in context that he could be a potential 2020 candidate. And is he just saying that to say that he's different than, his potential opponent?
So what? I mean, so what? I mean, if in fact, look, politicians are, with all due respect to you, Terry, politicians are politicians.
You're really going after Terry this morning.
Politicians are politicians, right? So therefore, they go where the votes are. Like Willie Sutton went where the money was. Mm-hmm. Well, his son was a bank robber, young people. No, okay. So.
All right, I'm going to fill in that pause and remind everyone that the stock market, the Dow has opened today. We are, as of right now, down 286 points, as low as 300 points at the beginning of today. So it seems that the new year will start as turbulent as the as it ended.
Can we forget
a few days ago?
Can we forget, Joe, when the first time the stock market fell 200 points, we all said, "Oh my God, the world is over." And now it's
another day at the office. Right. So we bring up the question of what that means for the stock market. The New York Times has an article this morning that says investors are still cautiously optimistic about 2019. But here's what could go wrong. And then there's a whole litany of all of the things that could go wrong. After an unexpectedly bad year for the stock market, investors are looking for clues about what 2019 will bring. The hope on Wall Street is that the underlying economy of the United States is sound, that the recent selling will burn itself out and that stocks will resume their record-setting climb. But the risk is that the plunge, the worst annual decline in a decade, could be the start of something more sinister. Does anybody want to take bets on
which
of that it is?
Let's talk a little bit about Mueller. Mueller report comes out. It's going to obviously affect the psyche of this country if it's in fact as dangerous as we think it, you know, it might be. And then, of course, I'm thinking of Donald Trump sitting there in the White House or listening to this program right now. And trying to figure out...
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, and trying to figure out what it is that is really going on here. Is the New York Times saying, I'll bet this is what he's saying. Here's what could go wrong. And we would say that is the psychological mechanism of projection. In other words, that this is what the Times, by writing that kind of story, is... positing or hoping, you know, might happen. That's what he's saying, not what Alan is saying.
Mm. Well, and I think it's even beyond the Times. I think this is just a continuation of what we were looking at this past year. Even before that, watching the market and watching some of the decisions that are being made. You know, I'm curious what will happen with the players in the market. Like, what will be the fate of Jerome Powell and what that could add to volatility in terms of what happens next?
Well, I think that all investors, large and small, are looking for stability. We still really lack both global and national and even local stability. Our leaders are few and far between. Our successes right now are few and far between. And until somebody can begin to bring some stability to the environment that we're all living in, it's going to be difficult for the stock market to settle down.
It's got to be tough for Tom DiNapoli these days, don't you think so? He's the controller. He runs one of the largest funds in the world that has to, and he lives or dies by whether or not, you know, they're making money. And, you know, he's a Democrat. And anybody, any controller would do that, right?
And this goes to, I mean, the timing, too, is important to think about because you start looking, it's in timing with, like, state and local budgeting season and what that will do to various accounts that are held and factoring that out. Even some of the simple things, too, when people are figuring out taxes this year, what will that do just to consumer confidence and investment as well.
This is my concern about the shutdown, is that so many state and local governments, especially New York State, do need the help of the federal government. And with it being shut down and with the partisan bickering going on, it's very disconcerting. So I hope that we can work this out.
We are out of time. The governor of New York State will join us just after the top of the hour. My thanks to everyone, and we'll be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable for this Wednesday, the second day of January, and we begin a new year with a new conversation between the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, and Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, Governor. Happy New Year.
Good morning. Happy New Year to you.
And Alan?
Well, and good morning to everybody. Unfortunately, I just couldn't hear the governor, but now I probably can.
I said very nasty things about you.
That's what I thought. That's exactly what I thought.
Yes.
Yeah. So, listen, we don't have that much time. So, you know, we have about half an hour or something like that. And I want to be very careful with you to caution you to limit your remarks if you can so that, you know, we can ask you the other 100 questions I have for you. All right?
I will do my best, good doctor.
Okay. Here we go. What's your New Year's resolutions? Or what are they?
My New Year's resolutions are what I laid out in this speech. They are to put forth the most progressive agenda the state has ever seen and to get it passed. I have another series of New Year's resolutions, and one of them is to spend more time with my daughters. I have my daughters who are now back in town. They were away at school and various places, but they're now here. And I've worked like a maniac all my life. And you pay a price because you can talk about quality time, sure, but the quantity of time matters, and I'm going to spend more time with them. While they still have me before they find some young man who passes a background check and they decide they don't want to spend time with me anymore.
So what's that like? I mean, what's it like to have daughters and to have them in college? And, you know, are they at all critical of you? I know my daughter can be quite critical of my intellectual positions. I wonder about that.
I have three. They're different personalities. So some tend to be more charitable. Some tend to be more critical. But they're an informed audience, Alan. You know, they knew my father.
Sure.
They sat at the kitchen table for years listening to my father and myself going back and forth and all sorts of interesting people in the home. They've heard 900 of my speeches. They're very politically aware. So their feedback is very intelligent and nuanced. So, for example, they were the inaugural last night. And I ask them for their opinion. And they're also, quote-unquote, young people. So they're very much of that mindset in the social media. So some of them tend to be more tactful, and some of them tend to be more blunt. But they are critical. None of them, they're all critical. You know, look, in my family...
Sure.
My father used to come back from a speech and he would say, don't tell me what you liked. He would say, tell me what you didn't like, right? So that's their frame, and that's what they bring. And it's very helpful to me.
Okay, so you did it at Ellis Island. You know, obviously that has raised some hackles. We know that the speaker wasn't there. We know that the president, the new incoming president of the Senate, wasn't there. Was that a slap in the face?
No. First of all, this was not an official ceremony, right? It's not a state of the state. It's not a state function. It's a private swearing in legally, and it's ceremonial. I was sworn in legally the night before. I spoke to Andrea Stewart-Cousins, and she had a longtime family engagement, and I understand that. I spoke to the speaker. I understand that. So, no. When we do a State of the State, et cetera, they will be there. Does the legislature – well, first of all, there is no legislature. There are people within the legislature, right? But do you have some people in the legislature who wanted the pay raise but did not want an income ban,
who may be a little angry at you,
and did not want to lose Lulu's?
Yeah.
Yes. Was it me? No, it was the commission. Do I believe there was any reality where there would not be an income ban? No. They had both passed income bans. I think the time now almost mandates that there be an income ban, especially if there's a pay raise. I understand how they feel about Lulu's.
But they're getting the pay raise, right, Gov?
They're getting a $50,000 pay raise.
So they're taking it. And you're saying that if they take the pay raise, they have to abide by the rest of it, which is no outside income.
Well, there is There are legislators who say it was illegal and the commission exceeded its bounds and there is a legal challenge.
Well, then therefore they shouldn't be taking the money, right?
Well, that was my point. If you believe it is illegal, then you can't, as a public official, accept a check from an illegal act and in good faith then say, I believe it was illegal. If it's illegal, then go to court and say it was illegal, but don't take the fruits of the illegal act and then claim it was illegal.
Hey, listen, we're losing two congressional seats in New York State. Actually, I shouldn't really say that, should I? Because I live in Massachusetts. But two seats, that's a lot of people, a lot of power by losing those seats. What are you doing about that?
Well, we have our congressional delegation has unprecedented power. You put New York and California together, you can't pass a bill for all intents and purposes. So, yes, we'll lose two seats. That's not great. But we still have a very, very powerful delegation. I don't believe in the scope of the long scope of congressional interactions that it will diminish New York. You need the New York delegation. You need the New York and California delegation. We are in lockstep on most issues. This SALT issue, which is going to be, I believe, the main issue for New York and California and the other Democratic states, we are totally aligned. And what I'm trying to say to them is, great, we now have the House. We have a break on this president. There's a ray of hope. Our parochial concern is to end the SALT tax penalty, which will be devastating to New York. It could be a 30% increase in property taxes. I capped the property tax increase because they were going sky high. We capped it to 2%. This is 1 year, a 30% increase. It would wipe out all the reductions we've had up until now.
Okay, but what I don't get is the other side of that question is, what are you going to do to stop the flight from New York State to warmer and different climates?
Well, what am I going to do about the climate? I think that's over my pay scale. I prey on it. But look, there's an in and there's an out. There always has been. We have places in this state that are great magnets. You know, we have Amazon coming. We have young people coming. We also have people who choose to go to warmer climates, especially from upstate New York, especially as they get older. And that's always been the way. You know, I remember 20 years ago, I was campaigning for Al Gore. I went down to a senior citizen home in Miami, and I started this speech campaigning for Al Gore. I said, anybody from New York, every hand in the nursing home went up. So that has always been the trajectory.
Okay. So you got a lot of things you want to do. Voter access. I certainly agree with that. I think it's great. Codifying Roe v. Wade, absolutely important, and recreational marijuana. How much of that will be in the budget document itself?
All of it. All of it. Time matters. I have had a Republican Senate for 8 years. You have all these Machiavellian interpretations of...
Including mine. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you tend to be Machiavellian, doctor. I think doctors tend to...
I once called you Machiavellian, and you got real angry. I remember that. So
I know, but since you use the term, I'm sure you mean it in a flattering way.
Absolutely, yeah.
But if you... The things I have not been able to do... First, I believe I've gotten more done with the Republican Senate than any Democratic governor. If I said to you, not that there's any justice in the world, doctor, but if I had said to you, I'm going to get a Republican Senate to do marriage equality and $15 and paid family leave and some of the most progressive pieces of legislation in this nation, you would have said, I was smoking recreational marijuana and it wasn't legal.
Wait. You did that. You got that done.
I know.
But some people say that you had your finger on keeping those Republicans in power all of those years, what with the, you know, Independent Democratic Conference and all the rest of it, and that they were so beholden to you that they had to, and that finally you pulled the plug on them.
Yeah, but that's all baloney.
Really?
The only items I have not gotten done are the items I could not get done because of the Republican Senate. They have been an obstacle to me because the items I need to accomplish, I want to accomplish, I needed a Democratic Senate, which, by the way, is why I was out there spending more money than anyone, more time than anyone, to elect a Democratic Senate. You look at where we picked up Democratic seats. I made a tremendous investment of time and resources, and now we have a Democratic Senate.
Yeah, but some people say you were doing that after all of these years because you want to be president, and that's why you did that.
Yeah, but this is all... Yeah, some people say the world is flat. What do you want me to tell you? I want to finish the progressive agenda, and for that I need Democrats, and now I have them. So now all these items that I could not get, but which I supported, and by the way, which when they were in the minority, they would pass or pass as a one-house bill.
That's right.
Now, and I understand the difference between that and reality, but now we can actually get them done. And I said, I went through the whole list. I did the full agenda several weeks ago. I did it again last night. And I said, no excuses. We either deliver or we fail. No bugaboos, no Dr. Shartok sub-themes and subplots and conspiratorial theories. It's very simple. I'm putting them on the table, and they have to be passed. And everyone said they supported them, so let's go. And let's go now, because we've been talking about them for years. So there should be no reason why there's any problem with a New York Roe v. Wade or health care protection or new gun laws or new voting reforms or legalizing marijuana or protecting the labor movement or a Green New Deal or criminal justice reform. Let's just do it.
Well, I hear a little bit of the Cuomo style, you know, there. You and very much your father, by basically saying, you know, there should be no, which almost anticipates that there will be that a sort of Pawtuckian, Faustian bargain with the legislature. You give me a pay raise without these things, and I'll give you what you want, even though it's the right thing to do. You hear where I'm going here?
No. You tend to go circles within circles within circles. And see, I'm basically a linear thinker, so I have issues when you do the circles. Do that again for me again.
Okay. George Pawtucky, remember him?
Yes.
He said to the legislature, I'll give you your pay raise, but you got to give me my charter schools. That was a deal. Remember that?
Yes.
Okay. So when you say they should, I see here sort of a tongue-in-cheek, they should do all these progressive things because they're progressive Democrats. What makes us think that it won't come down to your having to trade them something really tough like not banning outside income in order to get what you want?
Oh, no, that horse has left the barn. That law passed. They have their pay raise, $50,000. Yes, they have to ban. Yes, there's no Lulus. Those who say it's illegal, fine, we'll find out in court. But they have that. I can't. There is no legislation that can pass in their term that can affect their salary by law. That's one of the problems. If the commission goes down, Alan.
Yes.
They cannot pass a law that will become effective during their term. It couldn't be effective for another 2 years.
And that's interesting. So in other words, let me get this straight. So if, in fact, their suit, their lawsuit is successful, and the court says, yes, the commission exceeded its responsibility, they can't take the you're saying they can't take the raise.
Oh, there would be no raise. There would be no ban, and the Lulus would come back, but they would get no raise.
Okay.
And they couldn't pass a law to cure it, because the Constitution says you can't change the salary during the term. That's why I said gratuitously, when they were all saying, well, we think the commission went too far, we think this may be illegal, I was saying, wow. You better hope that doesn't turn out to be the case, because then you just lost your raise for 2 years and you're right back where you started,
okay,
where you'd have to pass a law that would be effective the next term. Also, Alan, when you keep, or some of them, I don't think ever read the law, it's not that if the budget doesn't pass on time, they lose their raise. The law says the raise is premised on performance, and the indicator of performance is that a budget passes on time. And if the budget doesn't pass on time, no one gets a raise, including the executive, including my commissioners, who frankly get larger raises than the legislators get. So it's a double-ended shotgun.
Okay, I got other things I got to talk to you about. Thank you for that. I appreciate it very much. I do. I don't
My
want to
pleasure.
Seem
dis- I know. I can I, tell you're sincere.
I don't want to seem disrespectful. Okay, so what do you think of Senator Elizabeth Warren's exploratory committee for president? Sounds like she's running. What do you think?
I think it sounds like a lot of people are running. You know, you have the anti-Trump feeling, which is pervasive, and it doesn't take much to say I oppose Donald Trump as a Democrat.
Yeah, but I'm not hearing anything about her. I mean, I asked you a question, and the question is, what do you think about her candidacy?
Well, I think there's going to be a big field. I think the problem for the Democrats is going to be this. It is going to be credibility. I think that the main issue for the Democrats is not going to be the articulation of the negative. It is going to be the articulation of the positive and credibility.
Yeah, but who? As the owl said, who?
Look, I think my two cents, I think of all the names that are out there, I think Joe Biden has the best case. I think Joe Biden has the best case because he brings the most of the secret ingredient you need to win for a Democrat, which is credibility. You know, where this country is they don't believe anyone. Trump was elected as a rejection to the entire system. Mm-hmm. They just don't believe the Democrats. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. You haven't done anything. And every idea you've come up with has backfired. And what have you done to help me in my life? You know, you don't hire an airline pilot who has never flown a plane. Where is the credibility in your argument? Joe Biden can say, I was there.
Okay.
I was not the president, but I was the second seat.
Okay, so let's assume that. Now that you mentioned the second seat, how about the possibility of a Biden-Cuomo ticket? Would you accept a vice presidential nomination?
I am not even focusing on any of that. That's what I said. You do circles, I do lines. What I'm doing is what I believe I need to do for this state. First point is, why was I on Ellis Island? Because the biggest problem the state of New York has is the federal government. We were doing very well in this state. more private sector jobs than ever before, bringing taxes down, passing progressive measures. We were doing well, not perfect, but we were doing well. And then enters the Trump federal government, which assaulted our economy, our rights, our values. They are our number one obstacle. We're under attack by the federal government. That's why Ellis Island. That's why I went and sat with the president and said, please help us on the Gateway Tunnel. Please give us money for transportation. Please don't attack women's rights. Please don't attack gay rights. They are our number one problem.
So you plead with them on the one
hand. Our economy with salt.
So you plead with them on one hand and you smack them on the other.
I will work with my job as governor is not to take my personal opinion and decide who I'll work with and who I won't work with. That is narcissistic politics. I will work with anyone and everyone who can help the state of New York. That is my job. That's why I worked with a Republican Senate. That's why I work with people who say unkind things about me. I sat in the Bill Clinton administration while he was being impeached, and we would meet with the people who were impeaching him. And I was saying to myself, how does he separate his personal disdain from his professional responsibility? But he did. So first, the federal government is the obstacle, and I'm fighting that obstacle. Second, back to my other point, Democrat credibility, do something that affected my life. Minimum wage affected millions of Americans. Paid family leave, millions of Americans. New Yorkers, free college. I'm worried about being able to pay college tuition. I'm a middle-class person. Free college tuition, gun safety, I'm afraid when my child goes to school, environmental changes, the airport is this disgrace, we're going to build a new airport. Upstate, they felt like second-class citizens, all new airports in upstate New York virtually. Make a difference in people's lives and have the credibility where you can say government can actually work for you.
Okay, but Governor, you have to, of course, not only fight with the feds, and I get that completely and agree with you, but you also have to run a state. There are those issues which we have a Republican guy named Trump running the country, and you've got to deal with that. I accept it, and I applaud you for it. On the other hand, you've got to do so. For example, we have a former attorney general. You're a former attorney general, and now Letitia James comes in. She's the new attorney general. She's attacking Cuomo all over the place. So I'm so sorry. That was very Freudian. She's attacking Trump all over the place, and she's got to run a legal system here in New York in which she takes on the wrongdoers in New York State. I'm concerned about that.
Well, you can attack the attorney general. Prosecutes violations of law.
Yes.
Trump was a New York resident. To the extent he violated our tax laws, et cetera, she should prosecute actions. The attorney general also prosecutes actions within the state of New York. When I was attorney general, I put Pedro Espada in jail. I put Alan Hevesy in jail. I also brought a lot of actions against the federal government. I mean, it's totally consistent.
Okay. I want to go back to Speaker Hastie and Senate Leader Cousins. It sounds to me that there may be a widening chasm growing between you and the Speaker. News media are describing it as a frosty relationship when it used to be close. We know that that new leader Cousins, Majority Leader Cousins, will be taking on, certain investigations and appointing people to committees who may look into wrongdoing in the government. What do you make of all of that?
I think it's simpler than all of that. on the investigations, look, you can always get into an investigations battle, right?
Sure.
They have oversight committees. I have every state contract, every member item contract, every grant that the legislature does goes through my government, so I could investigate every one of those. That would be counterproductive and a waste. That's what's going to happen in Washington now, where you're going to have a Democratic Congress that is going to use its oversight powers to frustrate the president. Why? Because they want to frustrate the president.
But you're not calling that a waste, are you?
No, but that is their job. The Democratic Congress, number one on their job, is slow down this president from doing bad things. We have the reverse in New York. Andrea Stewart-Cousins comes in, takes over the Senate. I think one of her first priorities is show we can function. This is not 2009. This is not the last time we had a Democratic governor and a Democratic assembly and a Democratic Senate. And you know what they got done? Nothing. Nada. Niente. All the naysayers would say, well, if we have all those Democrats, you know what's going to happen? We're going to go back to the old days where nothing happened. All these great dreams of things they were going to pass. And then we had a Democratic assembly, Democratic Senate, Democratic governor. They passed nothing. They took up gay marriage and they lost. So the Senate, show you can function, show you can get things done. Second, there's an added complication in the Senate. They are not monolithic. The marginal Democrats to maintain a majority in the Senate is a very tricky calibration. You have Long Island new senators, and these are different senators with different constituencies. You have Westchester, Peter Harkham, upstate Democrats. They come from a different constituency. She is going to have to balance the moderate Long Island upstate with the New York City more activist. This is going to be a real challenge for the Senate leader.
That's
going to be the balance. The assembly, it's easy because they have more votes than they need, and they tend to represent more urban interests. But the Senate is going to be tricky because, look, their election is right around the corner, and they have the Republicans already coming for them. They have to function, and they have to protect the marginals. Remember what happened last time. They had the majority for 20 minutes. And then the marginals all lost the next term. Brian Foley, Craig Johnson. So all the marginals from Long Island are very aware of that. They just spent a whole campaign disavowing a lot of the more progressive Democratic elements. She's going to have to work that balance out. Now, I think she has the skill and the talent to do it. But that is a fractious ideological bunch. And my agenda is a very progressive agenda. So don't think it's a slam dunk in the Senate that because we've talked about these things for so long, they're just going to rubber stamp them.
Now, we're running out of time, Governor, so I wanted to ask you about a particularly interesting case, and that's one Simca Felder, a state senator who had been helping the Republicans all along, who now wants, he always says he wants to do what's best for his constituency. Now he wants to rejoin the Democrats, who he has been committing what some people consider perfidy with. And the question is, do you think they should let him back in? Or do you think that their anger towards him for all of those years is appropriate?
Their anger is appropriate. Their anger is appropriate. No one knows it better than I. Because when I had to close the budget, I know there's one thing representing your community. It's another thing to say, I am going to represent my community, and if I don't get what I want, then I agree to nothing. So their anger is appropriate. The decision to kick him out of the caucus, that is theirs.
How would you vote? Would you vote to keep him out?
Well, because of the experience I have had, and because I can sometimes be emotional, yes, I would vote to kick him out. But here's the but. You keep thinking, and the conventional thinking in Albany is, well, the Senate is a monolith. They have these Democrats. They're all going to vote the same way. That's going to be the rude awakening. You're not, you do not have a solid, you have a solid Democratic majority, but you have shades of Democrats. Just the way we have shades of Democrats in national politics. Sure. You have shades of Democrats in this state. Being a Democrat in Suffolk is much, much different than being a Democrat in the Bronx. And my agenda is so aggressive that it's going to push people in those moderate districts to their the limit of what they're willing to go home with. They have some moderate conservative districts.
You know, I know that. Hey, Governor, your guy, Rich Azzapardi, told us in no uncertain terms that you had to be out of here. No question, you have a state to run at 10:40, and that's less than a minute away. So I'm giving you, you know, 40 seconds to say anything you'd like, but it has to be in 40 seconds.
I want to say Happy New Year to everyone. I want to say that we have a great opportunity in this state to pass a progressive agenda that will help our state, but will also light a candle for this nation. People are scared. People are angry. People are frightened. The federal government has played that anger and that frustration and that distrust of government. We can actually show that government can work and that people can work together, black and white, gay and straight, Christian, Muslim, Jewish. We can work together because that was the founding of America. And that's what I want to do with New York this session. A great progressive agenda passed together. Government makes a tangible difference in your life, so you believe in government and the Democratic Party regains credibility. Without credibility, we will win nothing.
Happy New Year, Governor, and thank you so much for coming on. We always enjoy your presence.